is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 476. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by Nick Squared.
Nick Squared! The other one's on the line!
Nick Squared is on the line.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Each week, we take a look at theater from many angles. If it's on theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Don't go away.
Step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
The heat does crazy.
It is Wednesday, July 18th, 2018. On the show today, we have The Last Act Theater and their production of A Real Boy by Stephen Kaplan. And later on, we're going to have a discussion of how we can make Austin a TGT. Stand by to find out what TGT is. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, Chicago, New York, New Orleans, Milwaukee, and Seattle. Don't go away. It's time we spread our wings and fly, guys.
It is.
Nick Mayo, are you there on the telephone?
Hello.
Hello. Well, if I knew what I was doing here as an engineer, we would have heard the dulcet tones of Nick Square. But as it turned out, we only heard Nicole because I didn't have you turned on.
Oh.
I know.
That's okay. I said he was on the line.
I know.
And then
I heard
he
that.
Appeared.
So it worked. Here we go. We're off and running. We haven't. The three of us haven't been together in a week. So this is good.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Great. All right.
Hello.
Well, so let's check in. Nick Mayo, how you doing? You're obviously not here in the studio. Where are you?
Oh, man. It is. We are opening our third show for Summerstock Austin. So we're in that final push to open Dirty Rotten Scoundrels tonight at the Rollins Theater there at the Long Center.
Right. So Summerstock Austin, you were guests on the show last week.
Yeah, we had a good time.
And so you have opened...
Music Man.
The Music Man.
We've opened two of three shows.
And Robin.
Opened the Music
and Robin,
and
one
Robin.
Spelled with a number one.
Correct.
I'm excited about the Robin. I'm going to try to come this weekend.
I'm going to try to come and see all of them.
You let me know.
Good.
Let me know.
Nicole Shiro, how are you?
I'm good. Busy. I'm good.
Okay, well.
Lisa Sheps, how are you? How was your travel?
You know what? I have been busier than a one-armed paper hanger.
Mm-hmm.
And very busy. We're in the midst of rehearsing for There and Back, which opens at Ground Floor Theater next week, and in the midst of auditioning for Fun Home, which opens at Ground Floor Theater in December. So it's been really crazy week.
How exciting, though.
Crazy good, though.
Yeah.
Stand by for very good good stuff. So let's see who's here in the studio. They've been so quiet because we haven't introduced them. They are the most well-behaved audience we've ever had. We have Chelsea Beth. Hey, Chelsea Beth.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm great.
And we have Rachel Steed.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
And then we have coming all the way from Asia, from the East Pacific island of Korea, Jamie Keener. Hey, how are you?
Good.
Can you say that in Korean?
Yeah, 안녕하세요.
Okay, thank you. Can you say that in North Korean?
안녕하세요.
Okay. I was testing you.
She said it angrier. Did you hear it?
She said it angrier. She said it with a flare of nuclear...
Firmness.
Firmness, exactly. We had a couple of interesting openings going. Oh, first of all, I should say... Another great international folk bazaar. I only heard one song that he did, and it was in French.
Oui, oui.
Yeah, he should. If he knew you were here, Jamie, it would have been in Korean.
Right.
Yep.
So you obviously, how long have you been in Korea?
Actually, 7.5 years.
7.5 years.
Yeah.
Anybody else spend any time outside of this country in any length of time?
Not seven
other than
and
visiting?
A half years.
Not seven. Yeah, I was going to say, not 7.5 years.
Well, I did 6 months or 7 months in the Bahamas.
Oh, it's better in the Bahamas.
It's better in the Bahamas. Better in every way. Spend a while on a Bahamian isle and you will never go away. That was one of our songs.
I still have my shirt from the 70s from the Bahamas that says it's better in the Bahamas.
Nick Mayo, you spend any time overseas in any length of time?
No, but I've dated a lot of foreigners.
So you're the
I
UN?
I think that counts. And by the way, you're welcome for not saying everything that was going on in my mind just then.
Thank you.
Because it was bad. So we're going to start with the good opening news, which is at the Delcourt Theater in the park. We had a production of The Public's, hold on, I keep forgetting the name of the program. It's 12th Night, but it's the Public Works program, which there's never been a bad, this is where they use half and half professional actors and half amateurs, people from the street. And some people from, I say people from the street almost literally, they take people and work with people in all walks of life.
And where is this?
New York City. But this is a production of 12th Night. It's a musical version, and it is there in Central Park. And of course, if you've been checking the news here in Austin, Texas, we don't know what rain is, but in New York, they're quite familiar with it.
Oh, it's been like crazy monsoons. They were so excited to have a sunny. My cousin was so excited it was sunny this week. She was like, yes!
How is she again?
Yes! Okay.
So this is 12th Night in Central Park. It's a musical experience. He calls this a happiness-drenched 12th Night. Of course, they usually always are.
Doesn't want to see a musical 12th Night? I just would like to know.
Well, the music and lyrics are done by Shaina Taub, and she also plays Feste, the clown. Let me read this opening paragraph that was written by Ben Brantley. He says, quote, it's called Illyria, and it materializes like a beachside brigadoon for just 90 nocturnal minutes in the green heart of Central Park, courtesy of the sorcerers responsible for the Public Theater's blissful musical adaptation of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night. And then he goes on for there. Nick, do you know anybody in the show? Do you know anything about it?
I do. I know Nikki James, which I'm super excited.
We love
about.
Her.
And friends of mine were there at opening night last night and raved about it, went on and on and on about what a great production it is. And any of our listeners who haven't been to Central Park, to Shakespeare in the Park, it's a really wonderful opportunity in the summer in New York. It's just magical itself.
It really is. And I agree with you, Nick.
It is indeed. And back in the day, now they give you vouchers, and they actually did back then too, but you would go sit in a long circle in line, in order, and you would picnic for the day, waiting for them to come and give you a ticket voucher.
I miss that. I miss that quality of it because you would have such great conversations with people and share sandwiches and bagels and coffees. I encourage people to invest in that part of the process as well because it's so much of the joy. And then you get to see the people you've sat in line with all day there at the show that night. It's a lovely community.
I absolutely agree. So it's really fun, and it's a beautiful theater. You get to see the Delcourt Castle in the background and all the beautiful trees in Central Park. It's really, really great. So they talk about, so there was a lot of, on the opening night, as your friends experienced, there was rain. So it was a modicum of rain, and they had to stop for 5 minutes to squeegee the stage so that actors didn't get killed. True. You do not want dead actors.
Oh, no, you don't. Oh, my goodness.
He talks about the actors going, presumably, like, not acknowledging the rain, like it doesn't even exist. And it was in the most positive of ways. And he says, the greatest privilege of being part of the theater, after all, is that you get to choose your own reality. And I sort of like that.
That's a great line in general.
It's like choose your own adventure.
Yep.
I choose my own reality every day.
Yes, you do, Mr. Mayo.
Me too. Among the other professionals in the show are Nikki James, who Nick just mentioned, and there's also one Shuler Hensley is in it, who plays,
who's he playing?
I was going to say Toby Belch, but it's not. It's the other guy. What's his name?
I don't remember.
It is Toby Belch.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Toby Belch appears in a couple of shows, doesn't he? In a couple of Shakespeare shows.
He appears in The Henrys, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So this is also a show where they invite the audience coming up to the stage beforehand to chat with the denizens. And y'all talked about this last week.
About being on stage.
Yes.
The shows. We did.
Yeah, and I forgot the show that you mentioned it about. Where they have the I think it was at once.
We were talking about once with the bar and the ordering.
Anybody
the
else see once?
Bar and
did y'all see when I was here?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you go get a drink up on stage?
A drink at the pub?
Yeah.
Yes.
I got called out when I did it too.
For what?
How
why?
So?
They just said like if you go up there, sometimes they'll like put a spotlight on you. And I got spotlit.
You got spotted.
I did. I was spotted.
Wow. Did you break into a tap dance?
I wanted to. I wasn't wearing the right shoes, sadly. Damn. I didn't have my tap shoes on, but I mostly just like did a really sad soft shoe off to the side.
Which, but you did something. And that's the point. You used that light.
It is. So here's another word that Ben Brantley used in his review that I just didn't understand. And I usually bring these in to let people, I say the word in context and y'all can tell me whether you understood it. I had to look it up with a dictionary. So here it is. The more cyberatic sensibility reaches a blurry pinnacle in You're the Worst, in which the heavy drinking citizens of Elysia's castle compete, blah, blah, blah. Cyberitic. Anybody?
Technical.
No, that would make sense. No. I have to say that in context, I wouldn't get this. Nick, you know anything? Oh, actually, I know the answer to that.
Not a clue.
Cyberitic means loving luxury.
Really?
Yep.
That's the weirdest word for that.
Well,
how do you spell it?
Well, cyberus or what? And I don't have my. It's based on it's being like this person from either mythology or.
We just went all millennial, like the future when we hear cyber.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, I'm gonna have to slam those millennials out there. I just did. I'm not gonna say where it happened, but there was a period where we were asking people to read the name of a particular French artist from back in the day. One Latouche.
Now you can't say it.
Well, Latouche-Lautrec. And nobody had ever heard of him, evidently, because nobody pronounced the name correctly. One person did stop and say, can I ask what that is? And we told them. So, good show, they say. Something to see.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
I saw Twelfth Night in... the Royal Shakespeare Company in London.
You did?
Yeah.
Lovely.
It was actually the musical like version of it. It was amazing.
Well, this they tend to do different music. This music was created for this production, but it was amazing.
I was like, that was earlier this year, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, isn't All Shook Up like the story of...
Yeah.
12th Night. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Super loose.
Yep.
Loose. Yeah, like Nick. Loose. Very, very loose.
So we had an opening at the Arena Stage in Washington on a Bound for Broadway show
Dave.
It's so funny. This weekend, the movie came on. I was laughing. I was like, oh, there's the movie. I almost texted you, Lisa, because you said you still haven't watched it. But it
I watch it all the time.
It was like 25 minutes into it, so I didn't text
you. No, I whenever Dave is on, I turn it on, no matter where it is, and I watch it all the way through. I love it. I've seen it probably 373 times.
It's a darling little movie. I do enjoy it.
Anyway, and I think it will make a wonderful musical. Although the one that just opened in the Arena Stage evidently needs some work. Directed by Tina Landau. Pop quiz. Who knows what? And Nick, you can answer.
Like, Nick's gonna answer.
What else is Tina Landau?
SpongeBob SquarePants.
I'm sorry, could you say that again, please?
SpongeBob SquarePants.
She did, but this reviewer...
You have to call in from here until eternity and just say that and hang up.
This reviewer from the Washington Post, whose name is Peter Marks, thinks she could have done a little bit better job than she did. There's a lot of help this thing needs. A lot of help that this play needs, especially in the second act. But that tends to be... what always happens for a new piece.
Yay, I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
They deserve their out of town.
Yes, they deserve.
Yeah, that's
right.
The whole point of why you have an out of town.
And there is clearly hope for the show, and I'm rooting for it.
Nick, you know people on this, don't you?
I do. I know Drew, who's one of the leads, and Josh Brackenridge. Drew plays Dave, I believe. There's a lot of really great people attached to it, and Tina Landau's. If you have Tina attached to a project, that's a big I don't know.
So you are correct. Drew Gehling plays Dave and the president. So he has a dual role. And he got raves on this review. So your friend deserves a little
friend was rocking
on
it,
the
man.
Back. Rachel York. Is this the one that Rachel York is in? No.
I don't think so.
No, I'm talking about, I guess it's, oh, it's the Go-Go's that she's in. The Go-Go's musical, which is our next victim on this parade. She does say that this critic does say that there's a hallucinatory sequence and a musical number by the ensemble called Presidential Party that he says is downright cringeworthy. But bottom line is, according to this critic, there is hope
there's
on
hope
the horizon.
On the,
for
I was
this
just
one.
About to say, is there hope on the horizon?
So
but
I, for one,
me.
Am rooting. I don't know where it's going after D.C. Is it coming straight to New York? Do you know, Nick?
I don't know if it's coming straight in or if it'll have a subsequent production after that. I hope we start to become a culture that things don't feel they have to rush in before they're ready. Go and do another production somewhere
True
else.
That. Come in when you're ready. What do you guys think?
Yeah
I think it's really unfair to say this is awful. Well, he didn't say it was awful. He said there was hope. But they deserve their out-of-town. They deserve their out-of-towns. And this is why we rehearse in different
totally.
Cities before you go to the big
true,
time.
True. And this is why we have previews as well. Yeah. Some people, I was just talking to someone who worked on Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark and talking about their 9 months of previews. Because it just dawned on me, and I never really got a clear answer, but it sounded like the answer was yes. So for those of you that are familiar with equity rules, the week before opening during tech week or the couple weeks before opening, as well as the entire preview sequence, you are in 10 out of 12s, which means they can work you 10 hours out of 12 hours. And they were in previews for...
Months,
like a long time. And so I said, were y'all on 10 out of 12 all that time? And she basically said yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was not received well, obviously.
It wasn't.
No, I had a friend that was on it and I heard that. But, you know, they also rewrote almost the entire script during that time.
Oh, no, they
too.
Went from,
I mean,
they went from 1.0 to 2.0. It was like when they fired Julie Taymor, it completely changed. It was in the show that I saw, and I believe that you saw 2.0, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw 2.0. Yeah, Greek Chorus was gone, all that stuff.
Completely different from 1.0, and I think I might have enjoyed 1.0 better because I did not like 2.0 at all. So here's the other thing. Head Over Heels opened at the Hudson Theater, and this is the Go-Go's musical, Belinda Carlisle and her team.
I think Anne Wyman and a lot of those, Jane Wyman and a lot of other people would be angry if you called it Belinda Carlisle and
she's
her
the one
team.
She's the one that's most well known.
Went off to do stuff later, but she was not only the Go-Go's.
All right, so don't yell at me. To me, she is. Anyway, so this is a reimagining of that poem that we've all read, that 16th century poem called Arcadia by Philip Sidney. Y'all remember that one?
Yeah.
No, that was the only people that were like English majors, poetry majors, read that. So this one seems to be needs a lot of help. Ben Brantley again. And Ben Brantley, now I didn't get the full story of this,
he
got in trouble. So kudos, it's got the very first trans actor originating a lead role on Broadway.
Wow.
And he made the mistake of saying something that wasn't completely sensitive towards the trans community and the gender non-binary community. And what sort of upsets me, and I want to talk about this before we get into the meat of this. So when I picked up the New York Times online and I look at it and there's a note at the top saying, we've had a lot of comments on this. See our reply, and it has been edited. So all I saw was the edited version. So we hear the reply from Ben Brantley, which I'm going to read in a moment, but you never hear what he actually said. I had to finally go look at it, and I believe that Broadway World did publish what they said. And I am going to... First, let me just... Well, let's do the Broadway World thing first. I've got it.
With gender and pronouns and...
It was pronouns, and it was... And he sort of said that... Well, let me read it to you. Early in the review, this is an article on Broadway World by Alan Henry. He says, early in the review, critic Ben Brantley seemed to invalidate the entire gender identity, writing, and its dictimonious nature matches the didactic thrust of the show that celebrates the importance of not being, and pardon me for trotting out what's starting to feel like the decade's most overused word, binary. Then later in the review, he purposely misgenders a non-binary character played by trans actress Peppermint, the first openly trans woman to play a principal role on Broadway, writing, Domitus, I'm sure that's not the right pronunciation, the king's viceroy and father of Mopsa finds himself strangely drawn to her. I mean them. So, I should say that Peppermint, the actress, uses they and them pronouns. So that's what he said that was pretty offensive. And I indeed, it's, you know, that someone that lives in that world myself is pretty insensitive. But here's what Ben Brantley said, if I can find it. Yeah, so he did it via tweet. And of course, I don't do tweets, so that's hard for
yeah.
me. He said, I feel horrible about having offended transgender and non-binary communities. I was trying to reflect the light tone of the show as well as the plot point in which one character learns to acknowledge another, not as she, but as they. This was meant to be a reference to the character of the Oracle, not Peppermint, the person who plays the role. This unfortunately read as more flippant than I would have intended, especially with regard to a performance that marks a historical first. I am deeply sorry. So,
well done. Good apology.
It's interesting, though, because that's the second time in 2 weeks the New York Times has had to apologize because the one critic basically fat-shamed an actress from Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Yeah.
So that's not good, New York Times. That's twice.
There's a theme here emerging.
Well, and the fortunate or unfortunate part is, I mean, we hold our people that write in the media, especially the New York Times, which has I'd like to think a more progressive bend than others, to a little bit more sensitivity in those regards.
Mm-hmm.
And fat shaming to me is. Not worse, but they should have known better with fat shaming. Gender identity is still, people still don't know how to behave.
She was trying to talk about the costumes, but she kept talking about the actresses. She really went about it the wrong way. Mm. And as a lot of people were saying, it took away from this incredible performer and what she did. And you sat there and talked about her shape, her size, her body type. And basically, the costume designer didn't know what to do with her. And that takes away from a performance. So,
I agree. Anyway,
I don't know.
Anybody else?
I didn't write them or say those things.
Anybody else? Any comments around the Ben Brantley
peppermint thing? Well, the only thing I'll say is I like the way he responded to it, took responsibility and accountability, and instead of being defensive.
Did he, though?
It felt like I'm sorry I got caught. Not like I'm sorry I did.
Yeah, he said you didn't understand my writing. Mm-hmm. Not I did bad first, and I'm sorry.
What was the first line that he said?
He said I was, and I don't have it up anymore, but he said I was referring to the character, not the actor.
Yeah.
And you didn't get that. And I was trying to say with a lighthearted view of the show. And you
but
didn't
yeah.
get
it
that.
Flippant. Yeah.
I thought I heard him say I apologize.
He did at the end.
Okay.
But through the lens of you really just didn't read it right. So I'm sorry if I offended you.
Yeah.
It's sort of how I took it.
As I'm trying to move forward and continuing to educate myself.
It's a process.
When people acknowledge, like, I feel like it's our responsibility to say, you took accountability if someone does take accountability.
Exactly.
Maybe not in this case he didn't, but.
Yeah, totally agree.
I agree with you.
We need to celebrate people who are saying, "Oops, I'm learning. I don't know yet, or I made a mistake, or I had a different intention. I'm sorry." Instead of getting in the loop of not good enough.
Yep.
But I don't know. I don't know enough. I'd like to read more about it.
And there doesn't seem to be a lot more read. It seemed to come and go pretty quickly.
Well, it did.
Well, that's. It's good that the conversation came up.
Just like head over heels might too.
Which is, yeah. I didn't read it, but there will be a link on our website, offstageonair.com, to Michael Riedel's column about head over heels, saying you better see it fast because it's not going to be there very long.
Yeah, there were some very, very amusing write-ups.
So I go ahead.
it's not being received very well.
No.
Yikes.
Well, and it's one of the Ben Brantley said in his review, it didn't take that go for broke attitude that the Go-Go's music engenders. Mm-hmm. So he just thinks it's missing. He did say Rachel York did really well, if I'm remembering correctly.
Lovely.
I don't know. Anyway, we really don't have time to get into this, and I hesitate to mention it, but I do, and folks may want to go and look at the articles on the website. There was an article in the New York Times about, and I don't know whether you guys talked about it last week. I've purposely not really been talking about it, but there was a suicide from a cast member from Chicago. In theory, after being bullied by the musical director and the director. And there's a big article about it, but it sort of brings into light the way actors are treated mm-hmm. by their higher ups. And I really had a big push pull because it's a tough business, and we're used to people saying tough things. And after a rehearsal, the actor, oh my God, what's his name? Jeff Leffelholtz, who was the standby for
Mary Sunshine,
who has been with the show since it opened, was basically asked to leave the show, serve the show and leave, in so many words, after a particularly difficult musical rehearsal. And then he came home, sent a couple of tweets. But read this article. It talks about just the nature of how actors and others, anybody, are being treated. And then there's another article that I have there about Jerome Robbins.
And then they went into crazy Jerome Robbins.
Who's infamous for it. And this is a New York Post article. And it's very interesting to read the article about Jerome Robbins. I will talk about one. It's not an urban myth because it happened, but it's said in circles that sound like an urban myth. He was talking to a cast. They were upstage. He was facing upstage. He was walking backwards towards the orchestra pit. Nobody said anything and let him fall in. Mm-hmm. People were terrified of Jerome Robbins.
Backwards into the pit. I know, oof, right? Oof. Yeah.
But he also, but he is also a genius. So one would say if he were active, if he were alive and active today, in our current environment, he would not be able to get away with what he got away with back then. And would we have all that art that he created? And what are the pluses and minuses of all that? It's such a fraught discussion.
A big conversation right now is how do you celebrate these people who have produced such excellent art but are ultimately not excellent people? Like, how do you love their art without loving them? I think that's a huge discussion in all forms of media right now, but especially Broadway and Hollywood.
Yep. Nick, you usually have something to say around these kinds of subjects.
I know. I'm like, you're kind of quiet, Nick.
Yeah, I'm intentionally a little quiet about that.
Well, it's a tough subject, but I think it's a subject that folks need to talk about and discuss. And so that you could still, have a situation where people are tough, but also have an outlet to deal with with how that affects other people. Right? Right. Okay. Right. Crickets.
I've never heard you so quiet. It's bizarre.
Yep.
Okay. It's a hard subject. These are very interesting articles, and I would read them. And my heart goes out to anyone who is in that much pain that feels that they have to take their own life. And
it's very sad. I was actually having this conversation with Jamie lately, just in general, that so many of my friends now, children between the age of 10 and 12, they're having these conversations on suicide. And I was like, we weren't having that many conversations as a kid. And the fact that I've had multiple friends having to have these, and it's impacted my family recently too. I mean, it's kind of overwhelming.
But I would venture to say that it was not that there was not less suicides back then, but we talked about it less.
Yes, but It also wasn't in because of social media. It wasn't everywhere all the time. Like, I didn't have the internet as a kid.
Okay, I'm going to switch gears. I do encourage folks to read up on the subject, read the stuff I posted, as well as others that you come up with. We'll leave on a little bit more lighthearted note. So this is for extra credit, everybody. Playbill came out with the list of the 10 most produced high school plays and musicals of the 2017-18 season. So who can guess what was the most produced musical in high schools?
Heathers.
You really think so?
Not on the list.
I'm going to say Spring Awakening still on that list.
Spring Awakening, not on the list.
I'm going to go with Beauty and the Beast.
Ding, 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 ding.
Really?
Rachel wins. That is the number one.
Wow.
I did that one in high school.
Really?
Followed by The Addams Family, The Little Mermaid, Into the Woods, Cinderella, Shrek, Seussical, Little Shop of Horrors, Wizard of Oz, and...
Coraline?
Annie.
Oh.
Just for you.
I mean, I love it.
I'm really surprised that Beauty and the Beast. Wow.
Okay, we are running.
You know why? It's because it's a tale as old as time.
It is. We are running late, so we're gonna go ahead and do our random legal ID here. And I do need to say, because I didn't say it right at the top, that this is also being broadcast on KOOP.org.
Yes.
I missed that. So here, let's we do a random of all of our legal IDs, and let's just see which one we chose.
Hi, I'm Jim Caruso from Jim Caruso's Cast Party. Woohoo! And you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM.
Jim Caruso.
We had some wacky things.
And I didn't say...
He was DJing and spinning.
I didn't say...
Jim Caruso!
I didn't say when we started that that the songs I chose had to do with heat, because it's so oppressively hot here. That first song that we came into was called Heat. It's from the summer of 42. And we are going to go out right now with From Miss Saigon, The Heat Is On. We will be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared. I love the remote version of it. That's good. I think that's the one that I'm going to make a...
It sounded like we were dying.
Yeah, I'm going to do exactly this to it. Created a little thing that we can just do that. We've been having lovely conversations with Jamie Keener, as well as Rachel Steed and Chelsea Beth. And now we're going to switch gears and talk to just Rachel and Chelsea Beth about this show, A Real Boy, which is Last Act Theater, and it is written by Stephen Kaplan. Mm-hmm. All right, thanks for being on the show.
Of course.
Bye, we'll see you next time.
Yeah, see you next time. So tell us about, Chelsea Beth, you are the director.
I am.
Tell us about this show.
Well, it's a wonderful piece that involves puppetry, and the puppets are, I would say, are symbolic of something that, let's say, microaggressions. The whole play basically centers around this teacher who has a student in her class who is virtually becoming a puppet. And she invites the parents in to have
a literally becoming a puppet?
Becoming a puppet.
So, kind of opposite of a Pinocchio.
Yes. Yeah. I like to consider it.
Sort of like what happened in that television series, Once Upon a Time.
Sure.
Yes.
He turned into Pinocchio. Little by little, he kept turning into wood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like to think of it as a reverse Pinocchio.
I just said opposite. Like, go with me, Lisa.
I didn't say that. Chelsea Beth said that.
No, I said it first to her.
All right. So I have to give this point to Nicole. Point to Nicole.
I'm just busting your chops.
But yeah, I mean, it's essentially this teacher thinks that she knows best and that she would do a better job raising this child that's becoming a puppet. She would stop the puppet forming. And so...
Because being a puppet is bad.
Of course. Okay. It's so
different.
Bad. Different is bad. Is bad. Yeah.
Right. Different is bad.
Different is
I'm
bad.
I'm here now. Okay.
We live in a utopian society here, people. Come
right,
on now.
I forgot.
So this dialogue right now is essentially the play.
Sure.
It just talks about how, what's the right way to parents? What's the right way to teach? And it does it in the form of puppetry. And she kidnaps the child and
Oh, she's a great teacher.
So it sounds like this is, to state the obvious, a metaphor for our current situation where anybody that's different, i.e. LGBTQ, immigrant, gender nonconforming, whatever, is a bad thing in our society.
It really does. Mm-hmm. It talks about inability versus disability is also a really big part of it. Uh-huh. There's a, you know, being a puppet, you're smaller. They're all marionette puppets.
What kind of puppets are they?
Yes.
They are
marionettes. So there's a whole metaphor about strings, but does society hold the strings or do you hold the strings?
So interestingly enough, go back to our earlier conversation, Jerome Robbins was also a puppeteer.
Yes.
Of marionettes.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't know if you were to bring it up, but in my head when she said marionette, I was like, good old bring it back to Jerome Robbins.
Yep.
Yeah, everything ultimately goes back to Jerome Robbins.
Forget the
actually,
six
that's
degrees
not true.
Of
everything
Kevin Bacon.
Goes,
it's all Jerome Robbins.
It's all Jerome Robbins.
When it's not Stephen Sondheim.
But there's no musical.
There's no music in this real voice.
So are the marionettes in the production, are they characters or are they props manipulated by your actors or
they
both?
They are, well... They're characters.
They're characters. Go ahead.
The character that is also operating them, I would say, is also a character.
Okay, so they are playing two different people, per se.
It's tricky. It's tricky to explain.
Maybe people just should go see it if they really want to get a clarification.
Maybe.
Okay, I mean, seeing is believing and understanding. But, you know, I think ultimately the puppets are a reflection of the human character and vice versa. Mm-hmm. The humans are a reflection of the puppets. They're very intertwined and interlinked in ways where you could not separate them. And that's kind of it's all about balance. And it's kind of a theme of the play is also like, can you separate what someone is innately from what society would like them to be, or can you accept the whole package? And that's another idea that's examined as well, with the very visual metaphor of the puppets.
Okay, so forgive my ignorance, but this is written by Stephen Kaplan. Is this an original piece, or is this...
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay. It's only been produced twice before.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This is the Texas premiere of a
Yay.
Movie.
Okay.
Way cool.
Very honored, very excited.
How new is this piece?
This piece is... I have to
within the last, 10 years, at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you working with the playwright, or is it, or is it pretty much set piece?
It's in communication,
okay.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Awesome. That's always
wonderful. It's not, like... being workshopped or anything. There's nothing really changing since his last edit.
No, there's just a lot of, since we are working with puppets who are characters and not props, there's a whole thing about puppet culture, which is very much a thing that came out of Stephen Kaplan's head. So we've had a lot of emails about puppet culture.
Can you give us an example of what should be considered puppet culture?
Yeah. For instance, do puppets, they talk about do puppets eat? And, so there's a whole line of but I thought you guys didn't eat. And so does the little boy eat when he's becoming a puppet? Where do the strings? Do the strings come out of the boy? And then he props out a little prop of a marionette. And how does one become a puppet?
That is the question of our time.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And that's cool because, you don't always get to be able to work with the playwright and ask all these questions. Mm-hmm. So how is that having access?
It's great.
Yes.
He's wonderful. He's super responsive over email, which is a rare quality in this world. But no, he's wonderful. We had questions about what does this line mean? What was the original intention behind this stage direction or this decision? And he gets back to us really quickly and is open to if we have an idea of, what if we did it this way? He's pretty open to us having a little bit of flexibility as well. So it's been pretty fantastic working with him, actually.
Do you think he'll come down and see your production?
Yeah, he's coming to see it.
Yay.
Oh, that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Rachel, you're the artistic director of Last Act Theater?
Yes.
And I'm assuming that you were the one that chose this for your season?
This was chosen in conjunction with myself, Mindy Griffin, who's our producer and stage manager, and Courtney DeGender, who's another producer and our lighting designer. And we have open submission on our website all the time for new plays. We get new stuff probably about every 6 weeks. We have a couple new things filtered through. This came through a couple of years ago, and I think either we sent it along to Chelsea Beth or we kind of just disseminated the new plays to people that we've worked with in the past. We're like, what do you want to do? And Chelsea really liked this one. Mindy and Courtney really liked this one. I was like, but there's puppets and that's scary. and they did sell me on it, and I'm really glad we chose it now. So.
And puppets are in these days.
Yeah, puppets are in these days.
Marionette puppets,
they're very
however.
Presidential.
Say that again, Nick.
I said they're very presidential.
They are
Nick.
They are indeed. So why this piece? Why now?
It feels very timely for now in that we've made so many advancements in the LGBTQ non-binary, non-gender conforming, for lack of like other air quotes, other communities. But we've also, it's all one of those things where we take one step forward, take two steps back. Where are we really, especially in recent times? And so this play really examines, like Chelsea Beth said, you know, what is the best way to raise a family? What is, you know, best for children? Is it someone who is within the rules of what society expects? How do you deal with differences? How do you deal with other? How do you respect the other? Which is something that is also examined, is how do you respect the culture of another without being completely insensitive to it at the same time? So it just felt, with all of the defining of others right now in our society, it felt very timely. And I feel like it's examining it from the perspective of, you know, childhood as well is an interesting idea that has recently become in the forefront of American thought.
So what is the character's name that plays Pinocchio, for want of a better?
Max.
Max. And how old is that character when we start the play?
Five.
So
it's
five.
In kindergarten.
Do you have a five-year-old actor?
We do not have a five-year-old actor, but we do have a 12-year-old. I'm going to say she's 12.
She is 12.
She's 12. So who is in your show?
So we have, well, for Max, we have
Genevieve Schroeder Arce.
Yes,
and
she's wonderful.
Chelsea Manasseri plays her mother.
We love Chelsea.
We love Chelsea.
Yes,
Sean Moran
is great.
Sean Moran is playing Peter, the father. Mm-hmm. Adam Martinez is playing
Principal Klaus.
Yamina, could you pronounce her last name for me?
No.
Kuhan. I'm going to say Kuhan. Sorry,
Yamina.
Yamina,
if that's wrong.
Yes, I really apologize. I should talk to you before. And she is playing Miss Terry, the teacher. Mm-hmm. And
then we have
Roxanna Taylor.
Yep.
Is playing Jilly, the lawyer for the family, the Myers family, the puppet family. Mm-hmm. And then Emily Christine Smith is playing the congressperson.
Congressperson.
Wonderful.
Oh, I love that we have the congresspeople in here too.
Yes, and she fights for the teacher.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So.
And the teacher's the bad guy.
I wouldn't say that.
Although the teacher is the person that isn't quite sure whether other is good.
I don't know that there is a bad guy.
Okay.
Yeah,
it was a poor choice of words on my part.
No, I think that's really great. That's the assumption. Like when you explain Terry, you think, oh, she's mm-hmm. she's not a good character. Mm-hmm. But when you see the play, you're really, you're just unsure who to root for.
Yeah. Wonderful. Y'all are the Trinity Street Theater.
We are, yes.
Lovely the theater. When do you open?
I love that little space.
We open on August 9th. So
August
9th. Thursday.
And you play through?
August 25th.
Great. And where can folks go to get more information?
Folks can go to our website, which is lastacttheater.com. You can also go to our Facebook page, which is Last Act Theater. And find the event information there.
Great. Rachel and Chelsea Beth, thank you so much for coming on the show. Hopefully you'll stick around. We've got more conversations coming up. And then, of course, there's backstage at Offstage. We'd love you to stay for that.
Yes, wonderful. Absolutely.
Great. Thanks. That was Rachel Steed and Chelsea Beth. Their show, A Real Boy by Stephen Kaplan, is a Last Act Theater production. It will be playing at Trinity Street Theater, August 9th through 25th. For more information, lastacttheater.com. And, of course, I kind of apologize for this in advance, but I had no choice.
All right, when I call your name,
we are back. I was going to say you are back, but no, we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Alisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
I wasn't sure if he was still there.
OMG.
You're listening to us at KOOP HD1 HD3. We're streaming this live at KOOP.org. We've been having a lovely discussion with Rachel Steed and Chelsea Beth. And now we're going to invite Jamie Keener to come back into the conversation. Nicole never left, and neither did Nick.
No.
And we're going to talk local stuff. What do you got locally?
Me?
Well, you, yes.
Me or, oh, Mayo, what do you have? Mayo. You can go first.
I've just got Summerstock Austin.
How did I know you were going to say that?
At the Rollins Theater, now through August 11th, three shows in rep. We've got new musical by Alan Robertson. We've got The Music Man, and opening tonight, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
You know what else you've got?
You got Trouble.
Right here in River City.
I knew where you were headed.
So for more information, you can go to thelongcenter.org. What do you have for us, Nicole?
I have two different things here. Oh, hold on. Page closed. Okay, here it is.
Let's start with one.
Okay. I have Real Women Have Curves over with Teatro Vivo.
Great.
We do love them. And nice bilingual production celebrating women and the incredible bond they share from the Latina immigrant perspective. And that opens this tomorrow and runs through the 19th. For more information, you can go to teatrovivo.org. And I also have, because this makes me excited, I love flamenco dance. And you and I have been getting down with dance in 2018.
Yeah.
So Aliante Flamenco presents, and I have no clue if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Anochecher, A-N-O-C-H-E-C-E-R, at the ground floor. Is that right?
I don't know.
Anochecher.
But that is this Thursday and Friday night at Ground
Floor
Theater.
Correct. And it's the Flamenco Dance Ensemble. And for more information, you can go to alianteflamenco.com, A-L-A-N-T-E.
And just to tease, they will be on next week, but Ground Floor Theater is producing an original piece by Alex Garza called There and Back, which deals with the immigrant community, migration, and migrant farm workers through the lens of magical realism. So they're going to be here. They're going to be our guests next week, and we'll hear all about that. So why don't we go to Today in Theater History?
Today in theater history.
Today in theater history.
In what?
All right. So in 1929, this is the birthday of Michael Stewart. I actually know several Michael Stewarts, but this one, born in 1929.
Who was this Michael Stewart?
He wrote the book for shows called Bye Bye Birdie, Hello Dolly, Mac and Mabel.
Who is that man?
He also worked with Cy Coleman on Barnum and I Love My Wife as a lyricist.
Really?
Yep. This is also the anniversary of the death in 1981 of Paddy Chayefsky, who only did a couple of plays. He did a lot of television dramas, but he did on Broadway, he did Middle of the Night and The Tenth Man. And this is the anniversary in 1996 of the off-Broadway opening of I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change.
Love it.
Oh, I love that show.
It's a lovely little heteronormative play about boys and girls who get together.
You know, it does happen. Boys and girls do get together. It's
but
okay.
Did you know that? This is
yeah, but it's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. It's different and wrong. this was the longest running musical review. As of January of 2001, it outpaced Jacques Brel, who was the longest running up to that point.
Huh.
And I love Jacques Brel.
Jacques Brel is a wonderful show. Another great
show. That music is so lovely.
I really agree
beautiful.
On that one.
Now here I have this circled because I have a question of why they included it in it. So the opening of this is Scott Wise, a Tony winner for Jerome Robbins Broadway, and gives a couple of other things. Talks about this show Lucky in the Rain that opened at Good Speed on this day.
Oh, him talking about it was in there?
No, it was about a show that opened at Good Speed, but they buried the lead, even though the lead wasn't that show. Never mind. I found it. So then there was a show called A Little Night Music that starred Catherine Zeta-Jones and Angela Lansbury in 2010, or actually 2009 for that. They took a little break, and who opened on this day in 2010?
Anna DePita.
Anna Lane Stritch.
Zip.
This is also the anniversary of the opening of Bring It On, the musical in 2012.
Watched that movie again recently, too. It makes me laugh, man.
Well, this was I don't know if you remember. We were so excited when it opened on the program because 30 actors got their equity cards from the show. 30 actors. That's just on a Broadway show. So meaning wow. that just
yeah.
Talk about leaping into Broadway shows. And I love the music for it. And I made a trip to Broadway. I wanted to see it, but I missed it. Hit it close, but by the time I got there. Sounded like you were going to say something, Nick Mayo.
I was just going to say, you said something like 18 actors got their equity cards. 30. And lost 30, but they had to get their braces removed first.
Don't be ageist.
Sorry.
Okay, so this is the birthday of Jeffrey Holder.
Oh, I worked with him.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Is he nice?
He is nice.
Or was he nice?
He was nice. Yeah. He was gone. Yeah, he came up, ironically, when I was in Albany. He came up in Albany and worked on a whole bunch of stuff. My good friend Big Daddy worked with him.
So people of a certain age will remember him for his Coca-Cola commercial mm-hmm. when he said Coca-Cola, the un-cola.
Yes, he did it. He did
it. Oh, no, it was Pepsi, I guess. Un-Cola.
It was the Un-Cola. And he did a local commercial for Armory Car Service, and he would do his, you know, his laugh was so famous, but he did the, you can't get Armory off your mind. And he would do his big laugh at the end, and I'm like, hello. He was Punjab in the good movie version of Annie.
That's true, he was.
Yes, and some James Bond movies, too. That's true.
He was awesome. May he rest in peace.
Yeah.
Also, the birthday of Dom DeLuise and Sam Mendes.
And Sam Mendes. That's an interesting group.
True. So here's what I want to do. And for the next 5 minutes, I just want to chat with, actually, I teased it going in saying that how we can make Austin a TGT.
I was about to say, when's this TGT coming back up?
TGT, a theater going town.
Oh.
So I will say this, if people want to call in and join in the conversation, it's weird we have a weird delay. But if you wanted to call in, you could dial 512-472-5667. We'll put you 5667. 512-472-5667. We'll put you right on the air and you can join in this conversation. But here's the lead into this. I've always found that Austin has a great, vibrant theater community. We have over 100 theater companies. There's theater happening every weekend, 365 days a year, multiple companies, multiple venues. But when you go and you sit in the audience, you look around and you mostly see other theater people sitting in there. What you don't see is a lot of Austinites. And one of the things that's great about living in a town like Chicago or New York or Los Angeles or even Houston, Texas, people will go, hey, what do you want to do tonight? Let's go see a play. Let's pick up the Chronicle, see what's playing, and just choose something and go see it. I don't think we have those people here, not many of them, especially with the onslaught of all this tech money coming in and all these tech people coming in that live north and west of the city. So my question to our panel here is how do we get those people to want to come see theater? How do we make them have that love that clearly we all have?
Man, that is the question, isn't it?
Just do that. Just call everyone.
Nick, you're quiet. You seem like you always have something to say on this.
Well, I mean, it's very challenging for me as someone who is in a couple of weeks leaving Austin because of
Yakum.
A lot of different things, but mostly because I miss the fine arts and I miss the theater and I miss the theater-going culture. So I come at it from a very different perspective. I love this city, and I think that this city has an amazing, like Lisa said, such talent and so many theater companies. But I think it goes beyond having the conversation of the citizens of Austin wanting to get to the theater, but the city itself of Austin wanting to create literal space for theater.
Mm, yeah.
So,
well, I think that's a chicken and the egg situation.
It's totally, it's one of those things. So for me, I think that you doing exactly what you're doing, Lisa, and having the conversation and asking people to get engaged in the conversation, I do believe that people want to go to the theater and might not know where it fits within the landscape of the city. People who are moving from California or New York are accustomed to being in a culture where the theater is prevalent. And maybe more conversations like the one you're having right now will help people find their way to the theater.
True. And the sad part of this is we have 2 minutes left of this conversation. So I want to hear from Chelsea, Beth, or Rachel. Do y'all have any idea of what could we as a theater community do to make people more interested in coming out to see the theater?
I personally am a big fan of cross promotion. I have an audience for the last act theater company that maybe other people do not have an audience for. So I like to talk up other companies as frequently as I can from the Last Act page, from my personal page, in as many opportunities as possible to get as much exposure as we can. And then ultimately, to Nick's point, yeah, I think there's a problem with space. I mean, we're not just fighting each other for space. We're fighting the music community for space and the improv community for space. And, you know, we're living on top of each other. And it's hard to produce really awesome, cool, interactive, immersive theater in a town where there's no room for it.
I think all the arts organizations have to get together and have a conversation. It used to be so it was music, it was this, it was that. But I can tell you right now, from a music perspective, musicians can't afford to live here anymore.
No, we're not
a live music capital, and that's what we were known for most on everything.
Yeah.
On top of it, we're one of the rare few cities that actually has one of five cities that has all disciplines of fine arts represented in their city, from an opera to a ballet to a regional theater, like one of five cities with that. But I think we need to get all the art disciplines together to discuss it, and not one or the other.
I also think that to build off both of those points,
and going to disturb you for a second. This is our last point. So go ahead, Nick.
Totally. In terms of being a city that nurtures theater, we must nurture its artists. Mm-hmm. Austin's having a hard time keeping talent because people can't make sustainable livings. Mm-hmm. So whether it's artist housing or more subsidies for arts organizations, I think we start with becoming a city that nurtures its artists. So then artists want to stay here and create. Mm-hmm. So I agree. I think it's the chicken and the egg problem, but we lose a lot of talent often.
Yes,
absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to pick this right back up at Backstage at Offstage, because I haven't said my part yet, and I have to. But I want to talk more about it, and I think we just sort of scratched the surface here, so we'll continue this conversation. In the meantime, we got to go off. So remember, if you're listening to us on the podcast, you're going to hear Backstage at Offstage. If not, you're going to hear Austin Monitor News. But remember, you can sign up for our show at iTunes or offstageonair.com. Just sign up. We'll send it to you every week. In the meantime, let's stick with the heat thing. And this is another one that you just have to play.
I got steam heat. I got steam heat. I got steam heat. But I need your
love. Well, we didn't have a show today here at the theater, but we've been here doing some maintenance here at the theater, but we've decided to take a walk outside. And we are standing here outside the stage door by the dumpsters. And we are talking to Chelsea Beth and Rachel Steed. I forgot your name.
Jamie Keener.
I'm like searching for my notes. I can't do anything without my notes.
You looked on the ground and I'm like, is she looking for a paper? Or is the ground speaking to her?
But we're all back here. You know what? Before we get into, and here at Backstage at Offstage, we like to learn a little bit about our guests. And we are indeed going to do that. But I'm going to take a moment to continue this conversation around
theater,
trying to get people to
TGT?
Come in. TGT. Making Austin a theater going...
Town.
Thank you. I was trying to remember, what's the other T? So we heard from Nick, and a lot of people sort of place a lot of responsibility on the city. And I do agree that the city needs to do what it can do for affordable housing for artists. They need to, in my opinion, as someone who got really nailed by the city, to get out of the way of small nonprofits trying to get to build theaters because they don't make it easy, and to try to make it easier for new people to bring in theaters. But I do think we as a community have to take a lot of the responsibility ourselves. So we can't trust that the city needs to or think that this is only a city problem. It's our problem too. And I've been saying this since I moved here 15 years ago, and finding a way to get us to play nice with each other in the sandbox, very much like you said, Rachel. sorry, you both have dark hair. That cross promotion is really important. You and I, Ground Floor Theater and Last Act Theater are not in competition.
Nope.
Your success is my success. Mm-hmm. When SVT closed, people came to me and said, Lisa, that's great for your theater. I said, no, it's awful
it's
for
awful.
My theater.
It was terrible
I said,
for everybody.
What would be great is if three SVTs moved in next door to me. That would be a good thing for me. So I think that that's something that we as a community have to do is really work together to bring in those people that come into the city. And one of the ideas that Laura Toner of Austin Playhouse came up with several years ago when I talked to her about this was maybe like a convention type thing where we all get together in one space and we have little nuggets of theater pieces all and then one enclosed kind of festival space. Something, but we all have to do it together. I think it's something that we need to do, but it's very frustrating as a producer of theater to sit and look in the audience when you oftentimes don't have a bunch of people sitting in the audience and the people that are there are the same faces.
Mm-hmm. I think you need to really get all the disciplines talking to each other and involved and supporting each other. And I do think it's great. This year there's something new that the Ballet, Opera, Paramount, and Zach did. I know they want to build it out and include other theaters or trying to monetarily figure how that works. But there's this ATX Art Pass, and for one price, you get to see four shows in four different venues, and it's get to go to the ballet, the opera, a concert at the Paramount. Like, it is all those different disciplines. But why aren't we having that conversation where people want to go to all those different things?
Anyway? And that's the case. And no offense to what you said, but you just mentioned four multi-million dollar arts organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
but so if they, those they, fail, everybody fails.
I disagree.
Yeah, it's a lot harder. I would love to be able to get Last Act in on something like an arts pass, but it's a lot harder whenever I'm not really sure whenever my dates for next season are yet because I haven't found a space because there are none. Mm-hmm. So I would love to be able to be like, yeah, come see my stuff. Like, we try to do two things a year. We're expanding out into online theatrical media, radio plays, and augmented reality. So yeah, come see my stuff. But I don't know where that is or when it is. And when and where determine what.
Right. And so many of us in our market, like Ground Floor Theater and other theaters, we don't have a set price. We pay. You can come in and say, I don't want to pay. And we go, great, come on in. Mm-hmm. We don't let price set a barrier. So having financial perks doesn't help us because we're already basically free if people want to not pay. So I do think it's a culture thing that we have to fight. That is a long-term fight, and it's a hard fight. This is something I've been talking about for 15 years, but have done nothing to advance it. So
you got to get the musicians talking to you. You got to get all the other people. I mean, Dale Watson gave a big finger and told this city off and put out a lot of things about not just supporting musicians, but artists in general. And that's why he's pretty much has his home base in Memphis now. And this is a guy who brought a lot of venue and revenue of people coming to visit and come to this city.
I was pretty shocked when he moved to
He's
Memphis.
Still here, but I his mean, home yeah, base is really there. And
he's still here, but
he pissed off a lot of people with his words. And honestly, I took a little offense to some of them knowing him the way I do, but then I got it and I understand it. And it's a bigger picture with artists in general. It's not just one lump sum. The way we treat our artists all the way around, from poets to performance artists to dancers to musicians to actors to producers, all the way around, needs to be a bigger conversation.
True. Chelsea Beth, you've been very quiet on this subject.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, we're talking a lot about building the community with the artists, and I wonder... Artists aren't the only people that can come see theater. So I wonder if there's a way for us to reach the tech community, which is
exactly what I said.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is that, you know, if you're a media designer, you can get in for, I don't know the price part, but I just feel like we also need
people make millions of dollars. Do not be giving the tech people stuff for free.
I think that what I'm trying to say is, like, we got to get them in to see a show.
Exactly. Which is sort of my point. You just made my point. So we need to get, and I call it people that live north and people that live west, because those were the seeds of this new Austin tech money is coming in, and they don't go to see live anything, as exactly as Nicole said. So how do we as a theater community, and I am narrowing my focus to theater, but we do also need to think of the entire arts community.
I think you put all these artistic, crazy, disciplined minds together in a room to have this conversation, that's how you build it out. I think everybody's so worried about their discipline that it's alienating. And I, as an Austinite, am like, why are you better than they are? And that bothers me and makes me not want to go do things.
Well, when you go out of the city and you mention Austin, they don't say, oh my God, that's a great theater town. 100% of the people say, great music town.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't hear that anymore.
Oh, I do. I do.
All the time.
But bottom line is, and if music, and again, the affordability is a huge issue, and I'm not discounting that, but if music, they don't have the exposure problem that theater, ballet, some of the other less normal, more esoteric music choices do. Anyway, but I think it's a big question that we have to we should pose so that we get people to come in.
You know what incentivizes everyone? Food.
And actually that's the thing that I hear from everybody when I go home or travel to a place. Oh my God, y'all's food scene is kicking. And we do have one of the greatest food scenes. And actually, a lot of the James Beard Award-winning chefs we have here, we have more than most cities do. And those guys support the arts, but no one's asking them or having a conversation or saying, hey, can we do stuff? I mean, I think we all need to sit down together as a group. I think we're very alienating that it's my stuff or this stuff, and we're not having a full, hey, what have you done that works? Okay, that doesn't work. What have you done? Has anyone talked to you? How can we and open up those conversations?
Bottom line is it has to be a group effort.
You've left and come back to Korea and come back.
It's actually interesting to me because, you know, I haven't been in the theater scene in a long time in the States, but coming back to Austin, it feels like Austin has become such a rich city with all different entities that people forget about live theater. And now I live in a country where people in the community, especially foreigners from all over the world, are trying to build like what Austin was building back when I was here. So it's interesting because I'm not here anymore. What people are trying to do in a different country is the same thing what you guys are trying to do here. And I find it fascinating.
Yeah, that's why I was just thought about that. I'm like, wait a minute. You saw old theater scene, and now what does it look like with these lenses coming back?
And you're even more limited overseas than you are here. So I understand the struggles that as an artist or being in theater has sort of placed on, you know, a community. That's the challenge.
And that's great. And again, nothing we can fix here, and we just need to keep on moving.
We're solving the problems of the world right now.
So let's let's
leave. We'll have an answer.
We will.
Five ladies solving the problems.
We can
of
do
the
it.
World.
The women
all
can make
the
a difference.
Ever needed.
So Chelsea
finding.
Beth, where did you come from?
A womb.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rachel. Where did you come? I'm sorry. Where geographically was that womb?
Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. New Orleans area or north?
No,
I wish
Shreveport.
Shreveport. Mm-hmm. Great. And what brought you? Where did you acquire your love for theater?
Oh, great question. I honestly don't have an answer to that. I just started doing it one day in college and loved it. And
so started in college?
Yes.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I started in college. I knew that I enjoyed to sing. I enjoyed painting. I liked art. And then I had the opportunity. I saw it was part of a curriculum. I was like, I'll do that. And I did it. And I haven't stopped for 11 years. So
it'll get you.
Well, so now you're director of this piece. You are also a performer. We met doing Parade.
Yes.
You're a performer. Mm-hmm. Do you prefer directing over acting or acting over directing, or is it apples and oranges?
Oh, you know, I think it depends on the day, the time in my life, which one I prefer. My amount of anxiety depends heavily on it.
Sure.
But right now I'm in a show and directing a show, so I get to do both.
That's right. Well, so we know you're directing Real Boy, mm-hmm. and we normally don't talk about the work we're doing at Backstage, but what's the show you're acting in?
Big Gay Musical.
Big Gay Musical.
It's an improvised musical.
I was like, isn't that the improvised musical?
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of fun and scary, isn't
improvised
it?
Musicals are fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
do you get
they're
like a crazy high off of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Afterwards, I don't remember anything. And I have to like really sit with it the next day to talk
about it.
Where's
it performing?
At Hideout.
At
Saturdays at 8.
And then go to the Hideout website
to
see it?
Yes, hideouttheater.com. Okay.
Awesome.
That's cool.
Well, that's cool. And what? How did you find yourself from Louisiana to Austin, Texas?
I knew I wanted to go to a bigger city that had more theater than Shreveport, and I don't like the cold, so it was either Chicago, New York, or Austin.
Okay.
And I chose Austin.
And you chose Austin. Are you happy with your
decision? New York, definitely cold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you happy with your decision?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, that's good. And what's next on the horizon for you?
Like as far as shows, there's just life.
Okay, choose.
I'm doing a kids show at Hideout, so just more improv.
So I have not. So we have a wonderful improv community here.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say it's right after Austin, New York. I'm Austin, right after Chicago, New York, L.A. It's us.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I didn't know you as an improviser.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Have
you been an improviser for a long time?
Since I moved here. Actually, it's funny because I moved here just for theater in general, but what kept me here is improv.
Oh, awesome.
Interesting.
Great.
I spent summers outside of Chicago doing summer stock for about 5 years, and I saw a lot of improv there.
Sure.
And I loved it. And when I came here.
It's all so different.
Yeah.
What town were you in outside of Chicago?
Michigan City, Indiana. It's about an hour train.
I know where it is.
Michigan, Indiana. I spent a lot of boozy, drunk college nights in Michiana, Indiana. Yeah.
So you were you said you were Michigan City.
City. Mm-hmm.
So is it also called Michiana or is
it's
that
not
a,
far from it? No, Michigan City is Michigan City.
Yeah, okay, mm-hmm. I didn't know whether y'all were talking about the same place or not.
But you made me think of Michiana. Okay. Drunk nights, boozy nights, college days.
Awesome. Well, Rachel, what about you? Where did you start?
I am from the bustling metropolis of Plainview, Texas, in the panhandle of this great state. It is halfway between Lubbock and Amarillo, for those of you who know what the panhandle is like. And if you don't worry about it.
Lovely.
Nothing out there.
My first and only trip to Amarillo was I was touring with Joffrey Ballet, and we drove across the panhandle and stopped at Amarillo and had the worst Mexican food I've ever had in my life.
And you've told me this before, and I'm like, that is
because I was so
blasphemy.
Proud of it. I was a Texan, and I was bringing my New York City ballet dancers through, and I said, you're going to have to try some Tex-Mex here in Texas. It was awful.
I was
so Amarillo.
You probably drove through Plainview on your way to Amarillo.
We were
on I-20, right up. You have to go up past
probably
us.
Did.
So, yep, I'm from there.
Did you do theater in Plainview?
I did. I did theater at Plainview High School, and then I got my theater degree at Wayland Baptist University with Dr. Runnels in the theater department there. And then I came to Austin after I graduated. So I've been here 7 years.
Great.
Going on 8. So I'm still kind of new.
And what did you have a focus when you were studying theater? Was it musical theater? Was it theater in general? Acting, directing?
It was theater in general. The department, as one might imagine, the department of a school called Wayland Baptist University is probably really small. There were 10 of us, which was a big class for that theater department. And we learned everything. You had to do all of it.
It's kind of got to be awesome, though, just 10 people.
Oh, no, it was amazing.
So hands-on.
Yeah, and you're a family. Like, I talked to all 10 of those people, and the ones, that's just the 10, like, that were there when all 4 years I was there. But there were others, like, that came, like, graduated the year I started and that were started the year I left that I still talk to, like, most of those people. So you become really close, and you have to learn the entire trade of theater. Mm-hmm. You can't skip by on something. You got to know how to stage manage. You got to know how to produce
which
light.
Is so important as in theater education. And that's when I talk to young people that are looking at theater. I always say you have to. It saved my life. I moved to New York to be an actor and ended up making my living as a stage manager and director.
Yeah.
And because I don't think I'm a very good actor.
In this town, I get paid to stage manage. I sometimes get paid to act.
You're on stage every day. You don't need a show, my dear.
So, but this that also reminds me of, and I forgot the name of the college, but Nathan Jerkins and...
Oh my gosh, and Roe is like, why
something
is this
else, something
school?
Else Baptist College.
Yes,
and
that
also, there's like 10 people that
in
live
Austin,
here that went
the
to there.
Nathan and I have commiserated
all within the same
about,
year.
Yeah, Nathan and I have commiserated about what it's like to go to a Baptist school and be in the theater program.
But they both
a lot.
Say about everybody that I talk to, and you just said it too, about the well-rounded education you got in this small school because you had to do everything.
You had to do everything. And really, whenever I find... people who focused on something, I don't necessarily think that that's bad. I think it's great to have a focus. But anytime I meet an actor who's like, I went to school, my focus was on acting. And I always ask, well, have you ever worked backstage? And the answer is no. I am always 100% going to say, go work backstage. Go find a company that needs a runner. Go find a company that needs an ASM.
Right.
Go dresser. Find someone who needs front of house, a dresser. Go do it, because until you've done all the backstage and all the onstage, you haven't actually done like theater. You've
True.
Just done a piece of it.
Well, also, if you want to be an actor, I had a very long conversation. I was stage managing a production of The Fantastics, and the guy that played the old actor refused to think that he would gain anything by learning the other disciplines of theater. Refused.
And
guess what? Guess who was the biggest pain in the ass in the cast?
Must have been.
He was. So that's pretty amazing. Jamie, what's your story? We haven't really gotten to talk to you.
Do we have to go
all.
Back to childhood?
No, I just want. So we don't know anything about you. So you're a theater person, clearly.
Yes, I am.
Okay,
I'm a foreigner now.
Yes, I know you're Korean.
Korean American. So right now, what I'm doing is I teach in an English language and literature department in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually hired me to teach literature, which is interesting. In this department, they wanted me to teach them plays.
Oh.
So I said, okay. And so I took on, I'm teaching American drama class and a British drama. So I teach them about Shakespeare. I teach them some just classic plays. And so that's what I've been doing for the last, I've been teaching English there for almost 8 years. But
wow.
So that's what I'm doing now.
So I'm going to stop you though. First, I have just a tangential question that has nothing to do with what you're doing. But you've said several times here today that you live in Korea. I'm presuming that it's South Korea that you're living in.
Yes, South
but
Korea.
But you don't say South Korea.
Korea.
I know. I just find that interesting.
You know,
because
in theory, there are two.
And
I said, would you let Jamie out, please? I called Dennis Rodman. He gave me Kim Jong-un's number. Could you let Jamie out? And he was like, no problem, Nicole.
Actually, now you just have to talk to 45 to get that.
Oh.
So, but you were here doing theater.
Yes, I was.
Okay.
Yeah. I miss it. I miss it a lot. Mm-hmm. But I'm just taking what I know and doing what I can at the university to teach my students about theater.
And did you go to a Baptist college to learn theater yourself?
I did not do the Baptist college.
Which college did you go to?
I actually got my BFA at Texas State.
Okay.
Yeah,
which currently, probably not when you were there, but currently is like one of the top five theaters.
Top in the U.S.
In the U.S., yeah. A musical theater.
It was fun.
Of which Austin no longer has a musical theater
discipline.
UT
took gone.
Oh, they took it away.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Where did you grow up?
I grew up all over. Actually, I grew up in New York.
I've heard of that place.
Yeah, then I moved to Texas afterwards.
Were you in New York City?
No, like upstate. A couple
what town?
From the city. Orange County.
Oh, what town?
Pinebush.
Oh, I don't know Pine Bush. I lived I lived in Orange County for a while as well. I knew a lot of people that lived up near Middletown and things like that.
But. Yes, I was very near Middletown.
Yeah, well, there's, Orange. Actually, Orange County is pretty big geographically, mm-hmm. but there's only a few towns in it. It's the baseball place. Cooperstown, isn't it in Orange? Is it in Orange County?
I don't know. Is it in Orange County?
I think it is. I may be wrong.
I mean, it is down near Kingston. I mean, that is kind of near Orange
County.
Yeah,
I think it is. Because a friend of mine that lived in Middletown, we met in Cooperstown.
Cooperstown's cool.
Yeah, it is.
Baseball Hall of Fame is cool.
Well, awesome. We've spattered on, so I'm going to have to get us back into the theater. And call this conversation over. But thank you guys for joining us back here.
Thank you.
All right, we'll see ya.
Au revoir.
Bye. Au revoir. Aww.